Mount Cheehaw is my Everest, and the Coosa is my Nile. Alabama's where I was born and raised, and I think I'll stay a while. We sing about sweet home and Dixieland delight. We tell stories about what goes on in Montgomery at midnight.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Tuesday morning. We do appreciate it. 251-343-0106. Trying to find something, if anything, name something Joe Biden did right in his first year. And what is he? What something that we could applaud in tonight's State of the Union address? There before a joint session of Congress. 251-343-0106. Joining us now on the line. It's been a while since we've had this gentleman on, but I'm always grateful for his friendship. State Representative Chip Brown joins us on the line. And I assume either there or en route to our state capitol. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Jeff. Yeah, I'm on the way up to Montgomery right now.
Well, safe travels, but we do appreciate you at least making time for us this morning. Let's kick it off here. It's been a hell of a ride these first 3.5 years. This year, it's my impression that we're moving at a more of a rapid pace for a fourth year of a quadrennium than I've ever seen. What do you make of what's going on up on Goat Hill this session?
Well, I tell you what, we've had some very intense days. Last week we had one day that was pretty well packed with constitutional carry, and then the riot bill, or anti-riot bill, really, as I say, the anti-riot bill and the transgender school bathroom bill, all back to back right there in one day. And That was pretty intense, you know. I mean, it's definitely been very compact. Normally we'd go have a legislative day, which we're on the floor, and then we'll do a day of committees, and then we do a legislative day. And this session we're doing legislative day and then committee day combined with a legislative day, and then legislative day on the third day. And we're doing full days. You know, we've had some 11 o'clock type days, and even Thursday, you know, we didn't get out until maybe 6, 7, something like that. So going in at 9. It's been jam-packed. And I think that pace is going to continue.
That's always been like one of the struggles, one of the head scratchers for the typical session has been, why are we waiting to the last week to do these big picture, big ticket, hot button topics? And the clock seems to run out. Now, look, a gaming or whatever, that's a totally different discussion. But everything else seems to be up front this year. And this last week with the constitutional carry bill, with the riot act, the anti-riot act, the transgender stuff, that we're addressing these sort of third rail-ish taboo issues much earlier in the session than we had in the past.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, I'm glad of that, to be honest with you, because I think that goes ahead. We go ahead and address those issues rather than have them hanging out there and sometimes dominating the whole mood and feel of the session. Let's go ahead and take up the issue, debate the issue, and vote on it, and then move on to other issues. And I like the way that we're doing that this year. I think that, to me, hopefully we'll set a precedent for future sessions.
Yeah, and because typically we wait till the budgets get passed. You don't have the BIR anymore, and it becomes kind of a free-for-all. But at least now, I think from leadership, I'm curious to hear what you hear, the leadership is aware of this, that these are the things a lot of these members wanted for their district, for whatever reason, they wanted addressed, and they are finally taking those concerns serious, right? That it's not just those three things I mentioned, but it's a lot of local bills and things like that, that this was important to that member, and we're going to give it its time. It's not going to be something we're just going to put at the end of the session, and if we have time, we'll get to it. If we don't, we don't. We move on to next year.
Well, that's right, and I'm glad to see that, too, because, you know, some of these issues, a constitutional carry is a great example of that has been there for years. I mean, it's just, and every year, you know, we'll take it up, and then, of course, we never do. And so this year, it was addressed, and so I like that attitude change. You know, one of the things we did this year that hasn't been done in the House and many years is we actually adopted a platform. I was on for Mobile. I served on the platform committee, and March Wilcox, also Representative 104, served on the platform committee. And it was a nice cross section of the House, different views and different regions. And the majority leader, Nathaniel Ledbetter, put that together with the blessing of the speaker. And we came out with a platform and presented it to the House Republican Caucus, which is all the members of the Republican House, we voted on it and, you know, put it out to the media, and those are some of the issues we've taken up. I know constitutional carry was on there, the Riot Act was on there, transgender bathroom issue was on there, and so we're addressing all those issues that we said we would address.
Representative, the Literacy Act. Now, I know Representative Collins had a bill that got through the House chamber that tweaked some of it, but not addressed, not at all, is this delay to the retention component. The third grade, if you can't read at the third grade level, you have to hang out in the third grade until you can. You don't get promoted to the fourth grade. That the Senate has passed a two-year delay. It made it through the House last year. What are you hearing there? Well, what is the sense from you and your colleagues about any delay, be it a year, 2 years, on the Literacy Act? Because that's becoming kind of one of the more controversial issues this session.
Well, you know, there's two different. Jerry Collins has the one bill, and then Senator Smitherman has one. And, you know, the general feel is that a delay is okay. I mean, I'm okay with that, just in the point of the COVID year, you know? I mean, we have a year where what I would like to see is more emphasis what we had back, you know, 4 or 5 years ago or more, where we really stressed a lot of reading coaches. In Alabama, they failed in reading. We climbed the ladder. I mean, I think we have to have that. I like the Literacy Act because I think that is a good benchmark. It is a good it is good to have that in third grade. I mean, studies show that if a child's not reading proficiently in third grade, then you're setting up the child for a lifetime of trouble. I mean, they studied incarcerated people and inmates, and those inmates, they could trace that back to having difficulty in reading. And it's something that we have to address. But I do feel that the delay, a short delay, not a delay of, I know one of the conversations was like a 4-year delay. I disagree with that. But I think a 1-year delay in order to try to straighten out some of the mess that was done by COVID, I think that's acceptable. And I think that's the general prevailing feeling in the House that I can see.
Well, yeah, and so many, with a 2-year delay on the table from the Senate, does the House do something different and then maybe you bang out some kind of agreement or something? I mean, like, I get a sense from a lot of your colleagues that enough is enough. Well, that they're not necessarily on board with the delay. Then I get some from others that, you know, the delay is the way to go. We don't have enough data to know how this law is working. Let's get more data and see if this is trending in the right direction before we exercise the retention component of this. But there doesn't seem to be a clear favorite in what's going to actually happen. It's up in the air.
Well, my general feeling is you're going to see some type of delay, but I don't think you'll see that 4-year delay. I think it's more in the tune of 1 to possibly 2 years. But some type of compromise will be reached on that. And along with the retention aspect of it, of, one, the way the law is written now, that a child could stay in third grade forever. I mean, they could be 21 and still in third grade. So those little technical changes have to be addressed and we have to have proficiency standards. I mean, so I think that we'll reach a compromise on that. We really will. I think that, we have to, but I think you're going to see more of the 1 or 2 year type delay.
Do you like the idea of a mathematics version of this? A numeracy act is what they're calling it. That it is going to be, the way it's explained to me, it's going to be a lot more difficult to do than the Literacy Act, because with the Literacy Act, you already had like a reading initiative, you already had some infrastructure there, but it sounds like to me that there is a movement afoot to start from scratch and do the math version of this. And the way Richard Collins told us, she was on yesterday, that she thinks we got half of a session left. It's still a possibility you could get it done this year.
I think so. I mean, I don't know why the third grade, couldn't be the benchmark for all of that, really. I mean, it's not a bad idea if you think about it to have, let's say, a third grade, and then before you go into high school, because we have the graduation exit exam. So, in essence, we're preparing these children for that as they go along. So we need to have benchmarks that actually have real impact, because the real impact of school is we're supposed to teach these kids to learn, to read, to understand math, and those are the two big ones, really. I mean, of what you're going to do in society, being able to read and being able to understand at least basic math. I think that effort were really put out there, I think that she is right that we could see movement on that this session.
Joined by State Representative. Oh, go ahead.
No, there is enough time to do that, I believe.
Joined by State Representative Chip Brown here on the program. Always a pleasure to have him on. Representative, let's kind of bring it closer to home here. I'm sure you're keenly aware of the whole Pritchard Water Board situation. And it occurs to me this. You guys passed in a special session during that ARPA special session a bunch of money for water and sewer infrastructure. And I'm not saying that, obviously the Pritchard situation is unique and some bad actors there, but maintaining some kind of oversight over state money, or I guess federal money that has been appropriated by the state to water and sewer infrastructure, how confident are you that this is going to be done properly, that you're not going to have any sort of misuse or anything like that? Is that something the state can do in an oversight role effectively?
Well, on the grant process, yes. There will be a oversight committee that will be set up to analyze the money, issue reports, and from that standpoint, on the grant process, yes. From an overall state, without the grant process, just having oversight on water and sewer, I think that's more a role of the Attorney General's office.
Well, it does seem difficult, though, right? 8M, and you give, and this is just a ton of money going into what I've always thought would be more of a role of a local government. But as you see, things get off the rails, and they can. The problem, I guess, would be this: if this money were misused or misspent or not done properly, then the state would be on the hook to pay back the federal government if they chose to come after the state.
Well, that's right. That's why you do have the oversight committee, and the money that's being spent, the projects, you have to apply for those grants. You have to detail exactly where the money's going, what the purpose is for, so to try to prevent that from being on the hook for having misspent the money. you know, that's always a concern. I mean, but in the end, you know, they were caught at Pritchard, and it, you know, I mean, I have faith in the Attorney General's office to catch those, but in the grant process, like I said, there is an oversight committee that oversees the grant process to make sure that the funds go in the right direction or spent on the right purposes.
Well, it certainly is, I guess, we'll see how that plays out. And you talk about the Attorney General's office now going to have to, you know, it becomes criminal. They're going to have to keep track of some of the, the money is misused. How do you feel about that in general, though, that the state being in these arenas where maybe it's not a natural role for state government, but just because we have this influx of federal money, it's now the ball's in y'all's court, right? And it may not be necessarily the legislature's role. It may be some agency, but this is kind of uncharted territory.
Well, it really is because, you know, the legislative branch doesn't have prosecutorial powers. So we can't prosecute someone or really bring them up on charges. But we, as a watchdog, we really have been thrown into that role because of the restrictions that are attached to all of the COVID funds. So the COVID money comes in, and if it's misspent, it goes against purposes that aren't approved, then you're right, the state is on the hook for those funds. And so that's, that could get quite expensive. Right. And then you're asking the taxpayers to shoulder another burden that they don't need to shoulder. So that's why we have to really work hand in hand with the Attorney General's office and compliance and you know, making sure that, you know, anything that needs to be prosecuted or at least investigated is done so.
And it's kind of a fascinating thing, but I guess it's the potential, at least the potential is there, and maybe in some ways that's a problem you got to deal with, but it beats not having the money there to do any of this. Representative, we're up against a break here, but you've been very kind, and I know you're on the road, but you've been very kind to come on your way up to Montgomery.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I appreciate you having me on. Happy Mardi Gras to you and everybody in Mobile. And, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come on. I look forward to doing it again.
Well, we'll get you on again real soon. That was State Representative Chip Brown there on the phone, giving us a little bit of time here before he heads into session. 251-343-0106. Let's get a break here. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Song of the South, sweet potato pie, and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again. Cotton on the roadside, cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got